Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Halfway through the show, it's gone fast, Dave. It always does when it's just the two of us.
Time flies when you're having a good time.
Drew Mandel is off this week. He'll be back on Wednesday's NHL This Week show, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. Central. Without further ado, let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're now joined by our very good friend, Michael Trakos of Post Media. Mike, how's it going?
Hey, pretty good, guys. How are you doing today?
We're doing pretty well. It's a little miserable out in Winnipeg. It's snowing and it's pretty cold. But when you're talking about the Montreal Canadiens coming into town, maybe that's going to benefit the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, totally. No Carey Price. And even if Carey Price was there, he's not the Carey Price that we see. So he's got this, I'm going to put air quotes right around this next one. He's got a lower body injury, but it looks like it's an upper body injury. And maybe this is a mental break for Carey. I'm not saying that he's faking it, but if you're ever going to have an injury, this is probably the best time for him to kind of regroup, refresh, and get back at it. It's funny, I was talking with Sylvain Guman, who up until Michel Therrien was fired, was Habs' mental coach, kind of their sports psychiatrist. And he was just talking about how more than any other market, obviously, his services in Montreal got used to the full extent. And over the years, dealing with guys like Pacioretty, Max Talbot, others, and I asked him about Carey Price, and or asked him just about just kind of how guys like in that market when they're kind of scuffling, how they deal with it. And he said, you know, it's probably more difficult in Montreal than any other market, especially when you're a goaltender in Montreal. How to get back on track, and I think the best method for a Carey Price would just be kind of, like I said, just kind of remember how good he used to be and kind of get back in there. And hopefully this lower body injury doesn't keep him away too long. But you guys are going to benefit, that's for sure, because you've got a goaltender right now in Hellebuck who is basically playing how Carey Price did a couple years ago when he was the hottest thing in the NHL.
Mike, we want to ask you about the Jets and Canadiens today. We want to start off, though, by asking you about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Of course, you're based in Toronto, and I know that some Leafs fans have been a little bit nervous. They lost three games in a row, and then Wednesday they defeated the Anaheim Ducks 3-1, their former pal Randy Carlyle, no doubt. But then they took a step back in the second game of that back-to-back, and they lost 5-3 to a surprising LA Kings team. When you look at this Leafs team right now, it's not really the offense that is struggling, because Austin Matthews is off to a great start. He's already got 10 goals. Is it really the defense that's letting this team down right now?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, every mistake they make is ending up in the back of their net. And I don't know if you watched that game against LA the other night, but like you had Jake Gardiner basically just fall on the ice when he was carrying the puck, and lo and behold, it ends up into like a partial breakaway. And of course, that's the kind of play where the goaltender never bails you out, it seems like. So it seems like those kind of plays are happening with regularity, and it's just the Leafs are always just kind of chasing the game where they're down a goal, down two goals. And that LA game was a prime example of this team can almost score itself out of trouble. And they're down, I think, 5-0 after the first period and nearly came back. Had Austin Matthews maybe scored on that second penalty shot, they could have been almost one goal away from tying things up. But it's difficult. Like, we knew going into the season that the defense was going to be this team's Achilles heel. And really, it's been there since game one. The only reason we haven't noticed, like, even that first game against Winnipeg, like, Winnipeg was out shooting Toronto, like, a 2-1 ratio, and yet Toronto was getting the goaltending that night, and every shot that they were taking was going through Steve Mason that night. So that's been basically been the recipe for success. But right now, Anderson hasn't been nearly as sharp. It was McElhinney in LA, but still, like, regardless who the goaltender is, they're really hanging them out to dry with the amount of opportunities that they're giving up. And while the offense has been there, it hasn't been quite enough to counteract how bad the defense has been.
Mike, you wrote about on Twitter about Patrick Laine having a mental coach in Finland. And were you surprised about how candid the Finnish sniper was when he spoke about his lack of confidence earlier in the week?
That's been him, though. Like, you know, I covered Laine at the World Juniors in Finland when he was like the golden boy for Finnish hockey. And I also covered him in St. Petersburg for the World Championships, where he was the MVP. And, you know, in both tournaments, like, really, like, okay, you're the MVP in the World Championships, you're doing a lot right. And yet against Canada, he laid an egg against the U.S. He might have laid an egg, in his mind at least. And he was so candid about just how bad he was. Oh, it's my worst game ever. I'm just so bad right now. I'm like, you're really not that bad. you're on your way to winning the MVP. You're leading the tournament in scoring. But that's how Laine is. And, you know, I had the pleasure. I'm doing a big kind of feature story on Laine. So I talked to his coaches back in Finland, his junior coaches and his club team coaches with Tampere, and both of them said that this is a guy that has a really, he's almost his own worst enemy when it comes to putting pressure on himself. And for the longest while, he was of the mind of, if he's not scoring every time he's out there, then he's a complete failure. And the mental coach that he had really kind of broke it down, saying, listen, you score a goal, that's 3 seconds out of maybe a 20-minute night for you. So let's focus on what you can do in those 19 minutes and 57 seconds. And regardless if you scored or not, how are you going to treat the rest of the game? And it's been kind of a hard thing for Laine to kind of pull through, because at the end of the day, he's going to make his living scoring goals, being that guy that could possibly win a Rocket Richard trophy. And it's funny, like I talked to his coach, like I said, from the Finnish league, and he said, the interesting thing to look for Patrick is last season, no one really had any expectations on him because he was a rookie. And, you know, as a rookie, you kind of almost say, okay, well, whatever you provide is almost a bonus. He said this year is going to really tell you how strong he is mentally, because now everyone's expecting not only 36 goals, but for him to build on that and get 40 goals, maybe even 50 goals this year. And, you know, Laine's aware of the expectations. And he said, we'll see all the work that he did in Finland with the mental coach, if it's going to hold him in this season. And right now, he's off to a decent start. I'm not going to say he's having a bad year, but you know, for expectations, everyone's saying this guy's going to score 50 goals. I wonder if that's in the back of his mind, because you read the comments that he said to the reporters the other day, and it sounds like he's still a bit hard on himself. So we'll see how the season goes on. But you know, the more goals he can get early on, I think that's going to help him out, because he's a guy that really is based on confidence.
We're joined by Michael Tracos, national hockey writer for Post Media News, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Mike, I know that you've written quite a bit about the Vegas Golden Knights. I've seen you tweeting about them. And when you consider that, you know, they were off to that 8-1 start, they've lost their three last games. They lost again to the Boston Bruins on Thursday night. Are they starting to come back a little bit to reality here?
You find me a team, Ezra, that can survive not only losing their first goalie, but their second goalie, now their third string. And that's a team with a lot of depth. So, yeah, it's funny. Like, even with Marc-Andre Fleury in net, this is a team that doesn't really stand out on paper as a playoff team. And I think, like you said, that they probably are coming down to earth. You compound it with the fact that they're riding a guy that is really like their fourth string goalie. It's amazing that they're even in a playoff spot right now. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, this is a team that probably misses out on the playoffs. And it doesn't take anything away from what they did early in the season or how they're kind of positioned to go forward. I think ideally George McPhee wants to create a little buzz in LA or Las Vegas, and then also get a top draft pick, because you're not going to win in this league without accruing a lot of top picks. And Winnipeg, Toronto, Edmonton, they're prime examples of that. You have to go through that. So this is probably the best thing for Vegas. And, you know, we'll see. Like, they got Ottawa up next. And don't be surprised if they still end up winning that game and then still kind of like you almost throw up your hands going, okay, well, I don't know what to believe anymore.
Yeah, they've got three more games coming up on the road trip. They've got Toronto and Montreal back-to-back, so it's definitely not going to be an easy end to this road trip for the Vegas Golden Knights. But just further to your point, Mike, is this just more proof of how good of a coach Gerard Gallant is, that he had this team winning eight of their first nine games?
Yeah, probably. Like, the game I saw in Vegas, it was amazing. Like, they picked the Coyotes, so take it for a grain of salt. But I was just surprised at how aggressive he's got these guys playing. Like, their forecheck is aggressive, but the way he positions their defensemen, it's very similar to what Nashville does, where you've got them really high up and trying to intercept passes, or as soon as someone gets the puck in the neutral zone, you're really trying to create a turnover. So I think it's a really fun system if you're playing there as a defender And I think a lot of the guys are enjoying kind of playing that kind of system because it's almost like playing a full court press in basketball where you're just constantly involved. You're not waiting for the game to come to you. You're just attack. And so far it's driving teams fits or giving teams fits. But I wonder as the season goes on if more teams are going to do pre-game scouting and just got to realize, okay, well, they're trying to do this to us. They don't have the horses to really play that. Like, it's not like you're Nashville where you got a Roman Josi or a Ryan Ellis or PK Subban and guys of that ilk. So he might kind of get in trouble with that and kind of almost like kind of playing with fire. But we'll see what kind of happens on this road trip because, you know, Toronto's scuffling right now, Montreal's scuffling, and Ottawa's a real good team, but don't be surprised if Vegas comes out of this and you're going, geez, I was about to write them off, and here they are again. They're still second in the Pacific.
So we're putting that on the board. Michael Tracos predicts the Vegas Golden Knights win their next three games.
There you go. 4-6.
You know, Mike, I wanted to ask you about Tampa Bay because they seem to be running away with the East and the team not a lot of people are talking about. But another team I kind of want to focus on are the New Jersey Devils because they're first in the Metropolitan somewhat unexpectedly. And do you expect this bubble to burst or do you think they're the real deal?
Yeah, it's a difficult one to say because, like, the contributions they're getting are mostly from their young guys. Like, you look at Corey Schneider and he's off to, like, not the greatest of starts. Like, a 916 save percentage, a goals against that's over three. So it's not like he's tearing things up from his standpoint. Yet here's a guy who's 6-2-0, and a lot of the reason is because of you've got guys like Jesper Brad and Will Butcher and Taylor Hall looking like the old Taylor Hall that we saw as a rookie. They're all playing their brains out, and a lot of the credit probably goes to John Hines. He's got these guys believing, and talked to Hines before the season, and he said that basically he was looking at letting the youth kind of run away with things, saying, look, the veterans from yesterday, they haven't done anything to get us into a position of a playoff spot. So their jobs are up for grabs. Their ice time is up for grabs. And I think a lot of the guys took that message to heart. And whether it was a Taylor Hall saying, listen, I better produce, or a guy like Nico Hischier is going to be taking my ice time, so he's playing well. These young guys are saying, oh, there's a spot in the lineup for me and there's a spot on the top line for me if I play well. So they're extra motivated. And if you know anything about John Hines and how he coaches, he's defense, really driven. You got to remember, like, he coached Wilkes-Barre Scranton for a number of years. And that was the year where Matt Murray had that shutout streak. Their goaltenders were always in the mix for lowest goals against average as a team. So, yeah, he's very much that Devils kind of system of built from the back end out. And he's got a lot of those guys committed to blocking shots and really playing strong defensively. And I think from that, they're getting a lot of opportunities offensively as well. So it's a nice story because I think all of us are picking Jersey to be in the mix with Colorado and Arizona and Vegas as the bottom five teams in the league. And lo and behold, they're leading the Metro still. So, it's really fun to see.
We're joined by Michael Tracos, national hockey writer for Post Media News on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Michael, you mentioned the Montreal Canadiens earlier, and Carey Price is out of the lineup right now. We don't expect it to be a long-term injury. Al Montoya is going to start in net for the Habs tonight against the Jets. When you consider that the Habs have only won four of their first 13 games, they're tied for last in the Eastern Conference right now. Is it too late for them to turn it around, or do they still have time?
No, I don't think so. Like, when you look at the standings right now, fine, they're right at the bottom, and yet they're only 6 points back of Philly for the final wild card spot. So, they probably have a good 3 weeks to kind of start turning things around and closing that gap. U.S. Thanksgiving is generally the barometer for deciding if teams are playoff worthy or if they're going to be one of those teams that starts selling off assets at the trade deadline. And maybe that date gets moved up a little bit every year, but I still think Montreal's got a little bit of time. And like I said, this Carey Price injury or whatever it is, I think it comes at the perfect opportunity here. Let them kind of regroup, refresh, get back in the net as the old Carey Price, because what he's doing right now isn't working. The other night, I guess was it against the Wild that their last game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they lost 6-3 last game.
Yeah, he didn't. Like, I was watching parts of that game. I was flipping back and forth between the Winnipeg game that night as well, and then the Toronto game was starting right after. And the parts I did see with Carey Price and even the goals, like, or even the saves, it looked like he was chasing the puck. It looked like he was just kind of, like, you look at Carey Price normally in net, and I'm not a goalie expert, but he's very just kind of composed, doesn't move a whole lot. It's not like Jonathan Quick in net where you're seeing the second coming of Dominic Hasek, and yet I saw a very active Carey Price and a guy that I don't really recognize, to be honest. So maybe this is the best thing, and like, Montreal is going to go as far as Carey Price takes them. And right now, he's not taking them far at all. And yet, this team is still a team that's not scoring a whole lot. Last three games have been a little better, but they need to score a lot. They need to help him, whoever it is, Montoya or Price, and then go up against a Jets team that's flying right now. And the way that Scheifele's playing and the way that Blake Wheeler's playing as well, it's going to be a dangerous, it's going to be a tall order to ask for them to come out of there with a win.
Mike, I should pre-qualify this question by my question by saying that the Penguins are in fourth place, but they haven't fared very well when you take into account the second game of the back-to-back. And they have 19 back-to-backs this season, so it seemed to be a problem they should probably figure out sooner rather than later. With all that talent, do you have any thoughts as to why they're faring so poorly in these second games?
Well, generally, your second game, you're relying on a backup. And I think they went with Murray the last time for the back-to-back, and That's also a problem. If you look at the save percentages of a goaltender playing two straight nights, the second night it's a huge drop off generally. Take it for what it is. Like, this is a team that's played a lot in the last 2 years, obviously, because they've gone to the Stanley Cup final both years. So I don't know how the NHL schedule makers do it, but it seems like they're saying, okay, Pittsburgh, you want a three-peat? Well, it's going to be tough. So we're going to run you through the ringer in the first months of the season. So it is difficult. They got, I think, the most back-to-back, like you said, of any team in the NHL. And it's really unfair, but it's what you have to deal with. The good news is, on the first nights of those back-to-backs, they're looking like a really good team still. So I'm not ready to say Pittsburgh's going to be in any trouble, because everyone on that team is still playing really well. And Matt Murray's playing as good as he can be. And Sidney Crosby's still Sidney Crosby. And throughout the second night of the back-to-back, and this is probably a team that's probably the best in the Eastern Conference right now.
Michael Trakos is the national hockey writer for Post Media News, and more importantly, he's a very good friend of this show. He's been coming on the show for, well, the 8 years we've been doing the show, so we always appreciate your time, and have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, guys. Thanks very much for having me. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, thanks. We're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to have a little fun. We're going to revisit the Taylor Hall for Adam Larsson trade. The Oilers and Devils played last night. The Oilers won. I'm going to ask you, Dave Minuk, who do you think a year and a half later won that trade? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. It's a Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk, Rory McGoran, Drew Mandel off this week. He'll be back next week. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Dave, I wanted to spend this segment talking about the New Jersey Devils and the Edmonton Oilers, and specifically the Taylor Hall for Adam Larsson trade. It happened about 17 months ago. It was back in late June of 2016. It was a trade that kind of shook the hockey world. Taylor Hall, a former first overall pick, was traded by the Edmonton Oilers. And we heard for months, maybe even years, that the Edmonton Oilers were looking at trading one of their young forwards. They finally did it. And Taylor Hall went to the New Jersey Devils, a struggling team. And we know how successful the Edmonton Oilers were last year, going to the second round of the playoffs, making the playoffs for the first time in 10 years. But now, skip ahead one season, The New Jersey Devils are 9-3. The Edmonton Oilers are struggling, even though last night the Edmonton Oilers defeated the New Jersey Devils by a score of 5-2. But Taylor Hall scored a goal, his first ever goal against his old team. So I think it was, you know, good timing for us, because I know yesterday we talked about doing this segment. So 17 months, call it a year and a half later, who has won this trade? Taylor Hall's leading the Devils in points. I think Adam Larson only has 2 points on the season, if I'm not mistaken. Is there a clear-cut winner of this trade, or did both teams win this trade?
The way it was presented was that it was a need for a need. The Devils needed more scoring. The Oilers definitely needed to improve their defense. Now, me personally, I look at a guy like Taylor Hall, and you just think to yourself, I mean, I don't know that Oilers fans could do this to themselves, but you think of what Connor McDavid and Taylor Hall could be doing on a line together, and it just makes you weep, because it would be probably one of the most deadly. I mean, I don't even care who that third player on the team is on the line, because that's just going to be a spectacular line. And what are the Oilers right now? I think they're 29th in the league right now for scoring. So they clearly, they had a good night against New Jersey, against Taylor Hall's New Jersey Devils last night. Right now scoring seems to be a bit of an issue for the Oilers. So you look at that and you think to yourself, okay. But, of course, you know, they've got Sekera out of the lineup. And so they're missing some pieces on the back end. Maybe Larson is being asked to do too much, but it seems like, and from what, when you read what the pundits are saying in Edmonton, it seems clear that the New Jersey Devils won that trade.
And by the way, we'll have Dave Jamieson of TSN 1260 Edmonton at 11:30 this morning. We're going to continue to talk about the Edmonton Oilers and their struggles. Not last night, though, as we mentioned, defeated the New Jersey Devils by a score of 5-2. But you look at Taylor Hall, as I mentioned, he's got 16 points in 12 games. Was it 5-2 last night, or was it 6-3?
6-3.
Sorry. I just thought about that. I thought that might have been wrong. So the Edmonton Oilers defeated the New Jersey Devils 6-3. You know, I'm allowed to make mistakes, Dave.
It's fine. It's okay.
Taylor Hall.
Rory looked at you a little cross, but it's fine.
16 points in 12 games for Taylor Hall. So he's on pace for 90 points this year. Roughly 90 points. High 80s. Adam Larson, he actually has 3 points so far this season for the Edmonton Oilers. But I just think it's interesting because the Edmonton Oilers went to the playoffs last year and the Devils missed the playoffs. So everyone kind of assumed, well, you know, the Edmonton Oilers got their top pairing defenseman. That's what they needed. That was the price they had to pay. They had to give up Taylor Hall. But Taylor Hall is a top 20 left winger, maybe even top 10 left winger in the league, in my opinion. Scored 20 goals and 53 points last year, missed 10 games, had a pretty decent year. You know, a far cry from his career year of 80 points, you know, 5 or 6 years ago with the Edmonton Oilers. But when you're talking about the best player in a trade, isn't that the team that wins the trade, the team that gets the best player?
Yeah, I mean, well, yes and no. I mean, if you want to look at it, I mean, hockey is a team game, right? So collectively, you want to look at it and you think to yourself, what did we fill the need that we needed? From my perspective, I mean, you're not going to be able to put those two players up against each other. That was not a one-for-one trade that you made and said, Larson is going to be a better player than Taylor Hall.
Well, and you're also talking about a forward versus a defenseman, right? So Adam Larson might only have 2 goals and 3 points so far this year. He didn't have a great offensive year last year. He's more of a defensive defenseman, really. I mean, he's a great skater. I mean, Adam Larson is a former top five. Was he number four back in 2011? I think he was fourth overall back in 2011. And you didn't get him to score 45, 50 points. He's not Chris Letang.
Yes, that was one of the few drafts we didn't go to, so we wouldn't know that. Oh, no, you were there.
Shout out to Remus. We were in St. Paul, Minnesota.
That's right.
That was the draft where Brent Burns was traded to the San Jose Sharks, if you remember correctly.
And I believe you interviewed Brent Burns and told him that he was the best-dressed player in the NHL.
Yeah, he is a very, very well-dressed man.
If anybody wants to find that, it's on YouTube, and trust me, as he looks different and Brent Burns looked different.
Yeah, well, I wasn't well-dressed, but he certainly was. Shout out to Burnsy, as if he's listening. But when you're talking about that trade, and I think that's why it's interesting, that's why we wanted to bring it up, because with the Devils playing the Oilers and kind of the opposite direction that these two teams are going in, and don't get me wrong, Dave, I do think the Oilers are going to turn their season around, mm-hmm. and I do think they can be a playoff team, but, you know, they've only got 4 wins so far on the year. Is it 3 wins or 4 wins?
4 wins.
4 wins on the year. So similar to the Montreal Canadiens, really, who are playing the Jets tonight. You know, they've had some early season struggles. It's still a month into the season, so you've still got, you know, 3 or 4 weeks to turn it around. But just think it's interesting how things have changed 4 or 5 months later with Taylor Hall leading the Devils in points, Adam Larsson, you know, struggling on that Oilers decor a little bit, I think the Devils won that trade. I might be a little bit biased because I'm a Devils fan, but I think that the Devils got the better player in the trade, and I think when the team gets the better player, that's the team that wins the trade.
Well, I think the Devils in the details, as and the truth is, as we talk about often with the Vander Kane, Zach Bogosian trade to Buffalo and you know, all the players that the Jets got back, I mean, you're just starting to see the kind of the fruition from that, you know, the Brendan Lemieux, the Jack Roslovics. So that, to me, is that idea that you're just going to wait for these play, you know, you can't necessarily evaluate trades immediately
right
on their aftermath. You see the totality of them. What did they do for the team for 5 years?
Right.
In my mind, especially with young players in their primes. So Taylor Hall, you know, what is he going to do for this New Jersey Devils team? Well, we're seeing right now what they're doing. He's unexpectedly has them in first, helping to have them in first place. And you know, Larsson, again, the Oilers collectively aren't playing well. They're a really good team, I think. I think they'll turn it around.
Well, and at the end of the day, he's a top pairing defenseman alongside Oscar Klefbom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like Adam Larsson is playing a minimal role with the Edmonton Oilers. He's playing 20-plus minutes a game, and he's having a big impact. The Oilers, as a group, as you mentioned, are struggling. It's
right.
not just on Adam Larsson. It's on the entire team. We're going to head to break now, Dave. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Greg Krupa. He covers the Detroit Red Wings for the Detroit News. We haven't talked a lot about the Red Wings this year. The Jets haven't played the Red Wings yet. They don't play them until early December, so I thought that we would have Greg on and, you know, cover the team for Michigan.
Especially with so many Michigan-born players.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk, Rory McGoran, Drew Mandel is off this week. But don't worry, a few people on Twitter are getting a little bit nervous. Drew's going to be back next weekend.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. This show's gone pretty well without him, so we'll see.
Yeah, we might have to actually revisit that. Maybe we'll let Drew sit it out a couple weeks. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Greg Krupa, covers the Detroit Red Wings for Detroit News. Greg, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You know, Greg, the Detroit Red Wings are a team that we haven't talked a lot about this season. The Jets haven't played the Red Wings, obviously. The Wings and Jets will meet in early December, but when you look at this Detroit Red Wings team, I think they surprised a lot of people out of the gate. They won four of their first five games, including a 6-3 win over the previously undefeated Vegas Golden Knights. They've struggled a little bit lately. They lost to the Ottawa Senators 3-1 the other night. They don't play tonight. They play the Edmonton Oilers tomorrow. How would you assess this Red Wings team through the first 14 games of the season?
Well, I think it's very much what happened last year when they missed the playoffs. It's a team that's more about development, I think, right now than almost anything else. You know, you've got one aging star, Henrik Zetterberg, and he's really the only star. So this is very much a franchise and roster that's redeveloping, rebuilding. They have, you know, they say that they're going for a playoff spot here, and obviously they are, but one wonders if they're hoping against hope a little bit there. I'd point out that, you know, they opened 6-2 last year, too, and I think the 4-1 start this year before, I think it's a 3-6-1 rush now, is, I think, indicative that when everything is going just about perfectly, they can pick off even some of the bigger teams. You know, they played a couple really good games against Tampa Bay. I think that's a little bit of rivalry left over from the playoffs. But I think this is a roster and a franchise right now that's hard-pressed for victories, hard-pressed for goals, and a little bit hard-pressed for good defense.
You know, Greg, when you do look at this roster, you know, you can understand that, but of course fans want to win, and it's all about those victories. So do you think that Red Wings coach Jeff Blashill is on the hot seat?
I think he's on the hot seat to the effect, and I wrote about it this week. You know, there was some talk that maybe the Red Wings are looking around, Dave Tippett, some other things. Elliot Friedman had that on Hockey Night in Canada last Saturday. And, you know, he's in the third year of his contract. They have not extended him. The contract ends this year, and the team has not improved for the last two seasons, and it just went through an 0-5-1 run. So I think any NHL coach situated that way is on a little bit of a hot seat. And my sense is if they don't improve somewhat this season, he probably shouldn't be renewed, but we'll see how that goes. I think a lot of it's more about the lineup than Jeff, though, but I'm not sure he's maximizing what they have. They don't seem to have improved over the last 3 years.
We're joined by Greg Krupa live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Greg Krupa covers the Red Wings for the Detroit News. Greg, you mentioned earlier that the Detroit Red Wings are having trouble scoring goals. Anthony Mantha certainly isn't having trouble scoring goals. He's got 6 goals already this year. It's his second full year in the NHL. In your opinion, is this a star in the making?
Could be. They hope they have 3 stars in the making, and if they don't have 1 star out of the 3, they're in worse shape than we think they are. And, you know, Mantha's up there, Larkin's up there, and Athanasiou's up there, and we'll see how all 3 of those go. They're developing players. These are not the Connor McDavids who jump into the league and are immediate stars. They're not the Austin Matthews. But I think over the long run, Mantha, no doubt about it. He's got 6 goals now, and he's playing some defense too. Some very nice back checking here the other night that really cut off a real threat in 3-on-3 in overtime. And it's the kind of all around play they're looking to develop from Larkin, Athanasiou, and Mantha. And much talk about Mantha not developing well a couple of years ago down in Grand Rapids, but I think the Red Wings' patience has paid off. And he talks about that. He says that. He thinks their patience, his patience, and the hard work he's putting in has paid off. He looks real good at times, I'll tell you that.
Greg, one player that you mentioned kind of to open the segment was Henrik Zetterberg. And, Z, as he's known, is just such an important player. He's been there for, I think this is his 15th season now in Detroit. He's been the captain since Nicholas Lidstrom left. To me, he's kind of the symbol of Detroit hockey right now. How is he handling this kind of quasi-rebuild in Detroit?
With great aplomb, and the leader that he is, and, frustrated at times, no doubt about that. I mean, maybe we're dealing with one of those players who's enough of a perfectionist he wouldn't make a great coach afterwards. I think he's kind of looking at the situation and saying, boy, we've got to play better than this, and some guys who've been told things need to be doing the things that they're told. I think there's been some frustration, but there's also an awareness. He talks about he and Cronwall sort of looking to pass on the heritage here, sort of looking to pass on the style of play, the stick-to-itiveness, the 200-foot game, that sort of thing. But when he and Cronwall broke in, there were tons of guys in the locker room who were sort of pounding that home. And, they were sort of 2 of the 23 guys who weren't inured in the process yet. And now there's 2 of them trying to inure the other 21 guys. So that's where we are. I mean, look, this has been a long run in Detroit, 4 cups, 25 years, all that stuff. And, a lot of the big names are gone. And, they're going through what they're going through, and yeah, Hank's one of the last guys. I mean, it reminds me of when the Gordie Howe teams. I'm 61 years old. It reminds me of when the Gordie Howe teams started going down here, and you were left with not much. And the Red Wings, I don't think, are that bad, but they're certainly rebuilding.
We're joined by Greg Krupa of the Detroit News live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Greg, wanted to ask you about the goaltending. A bit of an interesting development there in Detroit. Peter Mrazek, who, split the starts last year with Jimmy Howard, he's only started 3 games, though, so far, and he's struggled. Yeah. Jimmy Howard, conversely, he has won 5 of the 6 games for the Red Wings so far. He's put up a nice .927 save percentage. Many observers thought that Jimmy Howard might be selected by the Vegas Golden Knights, thought maybe that they would, choose to not protect him. In fact, they decided to protect Jimmy Howard instead of Peter Mrazek. How have you seen the goaltending play out so far this year?
Well, I'll just paint you a picture. There was a moment, and I think it was in Buffalo, but I'm not sure, last year when Jim Devolano, senior vice president of the Red Wings, who helped turn this franchise around some years ago, was standing with some reporters in the locker room, and Jimmy was, stripping off the sweaty clothes after another really good performance. And Jim Devolano just shook his head and said, basically, we told the guy he was done here, and he told us, forget you. They declared Peter Mrazek their number one goalie at the beginning of last season, and it certainly looked that by the entry draft, Howard would not be protected, but Howard took the job back. And you're now in a position where at Mrazek having sort of a second inconsistent season in a row and some questions about his work ethic, which he sort of acknowledged, his attitude more, I think, than the work ethic. And, you know, he's promising to be a good citizen and seems like he's heavily involved. But the problem now is they're trying to win games because they're trying to win games early in the year to make the playoffs. So they're going with the hot goalie. And, you know, I think Peter has looked better this year. I think one of Peter's things is he can really move too much. He's not quiet enough. Too much quick movement, too much over movement in the crease, and it becomes a pattern, and he sort of has to break that down and get back to his more elementary approach. And I think we've seen some of that in the games he's played so far this year. Neither goalie gets a lot of defensive support in Detroit. It's good to have two good goalies going, and I think right now their problem is they can't get Peter going because they feel they have to play Jimmy because Jimmy looks so good. And I think that's the story in a nutshell. But Jimmy Howard took that job back. They were ready to tell him, you're number two, we're going with Peter. And he said no.
You know, Greg, another person in the organization I couldn't imagine not being part of the Detroit Red Wings is GM Ken Holland. Now, there's been some talk that he is considering moving on. Do you think that there's a time in the near future that Ken Holland will not be the GM of the Detroit Red Wings?
Well, it depends what you mean by near, and let's break that down a little bit. First of all, just another one of those little pictures in time, you know. A number of years ago before Nick Lidstrom retired, Ken Holland joking that the moment Nick's out of here, I'm out of here kind of thing, you know. How do we go on without Nick? And I think we've seen what's happened to the franchise after Nick and some other people left, you know, and Ken joking about that. But on the record, he has stated, I'm here for this. I'm here for this rebuild. We're going to get that back. On the record, Chris Illich, the son of the late Mike Illich, and Marion Illich, who's still very much involved in this franchise, and we leave Mrs. Illich's name out of this conversation sometimes way too much. Chris Illich has stated, you know, 100% confidence in this guy. You know, absolutely confident that he's going to bring this thing back, like the direction they're on, understand what's going on, that sort of thing. All of that said, Ken's 62. He's done a lot of great things. I mean, if he walks away now, it's a great career, right? But if he walks away now, he kind of leaves the Red Wings roster in flux. The only other thing I'll add is his contract's up at the end of the year, and we've heard no conversations yet about extending this thing. My sense is that it's sort of up to Ken in a way. Is he going to them and saying, yeah, I want to do this? Is he going to the Illiches and saying what he is publicly, I'm really enthusiastic, we got to get the Red Wings back to being the Red Wings, and it's up to that. As for what you're hearing, I mean, there have been people tearing this guy down for 5 years now in the fan base. You know, we go back to people thinking that it was really Devilano and Bowman who got the cups going in Detroit, and that, you know, Ken was an assistant for the first cup in 97, and then they made him general manager in 98, and he kind of inherited I don't buy that logic at all. I mean, I think the 2008 cup is an advantage of him winning after the cap was put in place and with a bit of a reconstructed thing. So obviously one of the great general managers of all time, I think. I wrote a column, not to go on, you guys, but I wrote a column about 7 or 8 years ago saying in all four major sports in Detroit, this is probably the best general manager of all time in all four major sports. And I think it's kind of up to Ken and the Illiches if they want it to go on.
Craig, final question for you here. All of those years watching the Red Wings and old Joe Louis Arena, as you mentioned, though, a lot of successful years, a lot of Stanley Cups, but how have you enjoyed the transition to brand spanking new Little Caesars Arena?
Well, I break it down to real selfish reasons, you know, guys. Beat reporter after the game, can I get from the top row where we sit down to the dressing rooms in time after the horn blows to end the game to get the interviews? You can do that at Joe Louis Arena. In most buildings in the league, you can't do that. We kind of go down in the third period, watch it on TV, and get the interviews. Believe it or not, there's a little secret. Well, in Little Caesars Arena, you can still make it down just like we could at Joe Louis Arena. So I'm real pleased, okay? There's the selfish reasons. Meanwhile, it's a gorgeous place. It's a gorgeous place with maybe too many activities out on the concourse when the team isn't going well, so you got a lot of empty seats right now. They are the 19,600 closest seats in the NHL. It was designed that way. Some of the seats are a little higher than they were at the Joe, but they're closer to the ice. The sight lines in this thing are just gorgeous, and I think when you get the kind of hockey team you had playing a few years ago in this town back in there, it's going to be a really rough place for out-of-towners to play. I think they did a great job with the place. There's a lot of sentiment tied up in the Joe. There was a lot of sentiment tied up in Olympia. I think this is kind of a marriage of the Joe and the Olympia. The Olympia was a really intimate spot, and for an arena this big, it's pretty intimate, too. I think they did a pretty good job, you guys.
So, Greg, how does it work? Is it just unlimited all-you-can-eat Little Caesars pizza up there? Or?
Oh, my God. If my doctor heard that, he'd be right after both of all of us. No, thank God, no. But it's a lot of M&M. I find that it's sugar and sodium on deadline. I don't know what that's about, you guys, but that's what I go running for.
Yeah, Greg, during the Jets season, we pretty much live on popcorn and M&M's, so it's you know, it's always a good idea when the Jets aren't playing to maybe grab that broccoli or kale, but I'm a big fan of Little Caesars Pizza, so maybe we're going to have to make a little trip down to the new arena.
Well, it's certainly available, I'll tell you that. And, you know, all kidding aside, it built the place. So say what you will about that pizza. I mean, it built the place. It bought the Tigers. And the other thing, fellas, you know, I'm a native of the city, went to high school downtown. That area of town has not looked like this vibrant since the 50s. So a lot of money sunk into that arena, and you can debate whether the taxpayers should have paid for it or not. But there's also some redevelopment going on around it that thank God we're seeing that in Detroit after all these years.
Yeah, Greg, in all seriousness, though, it is great for the city of Detroit. I know that Dave was at the old Joe Louis Arena, finished school in Michigan, lived in Michigan, and it is just great for the entire city what's happening there right now with the revitalization.
And, you know, they brought the Pistons back down, and you know, God love Oakland County. We have a real sprawling metropolitan area here of 4.3 million people, and only 700,000 of them now living in the city of Detroit. So it helps to have the Pistons down there. It helps that the Red Wings stayed. There's a lot of bragging about all four franchises being right on top of each other at the intersection of Woodward and Interstate 75. And, you know, it feels good. Guys, I went to high school about five blocks away, so I'm digging it.
That's awesome, and we really appreciate you coming on this morning, Greg. Greg Krupa covers the Detroit Red Wings for the Detroit News. Follow him on Twitter, at Greg Krupa. Greg, have a great weekend.
Thanks a lot for having me, you guys. Enjoy the hockey tonight.
Thanks a lot, Greg. Let's head to break. We're live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Greg Krupa of the Detroit News for joining us on the show. Rory's telling me this is going to be a quick segment. We've got Dave Jamieson coming up at 11:30. Dave Jamieson, of course, of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 Edmonton, our very good friend. We're going to talk about the Oilers. Big win for the Oilers last night, Dave. 6-3, not 5-2, as
correct.
I said earlier.
Well, I'm sure at one point maybe it was 5-2.
I think it was 5-2 when I last checked.
Perhaps.
I know that the Devils tied the game up in the second period early on, and then the Oilers kind of took it from there, and the Devils weren't able to muster much of a comeback. So we're going to be joined by Dave at 11:30. Dave, I wanted to quickly talk about an article that our friend Dan Rosen, NHL.com senior writer, wrote yesterday about the top 10 intriguing NHL storylines 1 month into the season. And obviously, you know, one of the storylines that jumps out to everybody is the Vegas Golden Knights and their hot start to the season, winning 8 of their last 9 games. When you consider that they lost to the Boston Bruins 2 nights ago, they've lost 3 in a row. Is it obvious to say that the Vegas Golden Knights are really coming back down to earth?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, Michael Tracos talked about when you lose all those goalies, how are you going to be an effective team? You've lost your first, your second, and your third string goalie, and now you're really just, I mean, they have their amateur on an emergency call-up right now.
Dylan Ferguson.
From Kamloops, right?
Yep.
So really you've got you know, you're just hanging by the skin of your teeth at that point. And, you know, they said they're standing pat. That, you know, I mean, it could be something George McPhee, GM George McPhee, is talking about. And, you know, maybe he's looking to do a trade depending on how long his goaltenders are going to be out. But, you know, from my perspective, the interesting thing about Vegas, I think it's all interesting, but, you know, specifically the fact that they're 5-0-1 at home and they're 6-1-0 at home, 2-3-0 at away from the friendly confines of Las Vegas. So perhaps the shine of the city of Las Vegas, a new city, a new team, has really kind of excited the NHL. But, you know, maybe the lights of Planet Hollywood, as we talked about, Ezzie, are causing a little bit of the visiting team buzz, and maybe they're a little bit not ready to start the games. I mean, I shouldn't say it's all that. Obviously, the team is playing well. They've kind of cohesive group. We talked about it earlier in the season, how they're kind of these cast-offs from their team, so maybe they have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder to play well. And I think that, you know, we're seeing a little bit of a – they have a six-game road trip, as you touched on just now. They've lost the first three games of that. They've got three more games. We'll see how they come out of this. And then, again, we'll see. To me, the most curious aspect will really be the home versus away record. If this is kind of an even split where they're really good at home and really good, really, you know, kind of poor away, it could be more emblematic of the team being a little bit less, more of an effect of the city and the newness of the city to teams visiting.
And Dave, the Golden Knights visit the Ottawa Senators. That game actually starts in about an hour and a half. It starts at 1 o'clock Central, and then they've got the day off on Sunday, and then they've got Toronto and Montreal back-to-back next Monday and Tuesday. So they're finishing off that six-game road trip, as you mentioned, the last three games coming up here in Eastern Canada. And then, as you know, they've got the Winnipeg Jets at home, their first game back after that six-game road trip, and then they go back on the road for another couple games. So the Vegas Golden Knights still have a lot of home games, road games coming up. Five of their next six games are going to be on the road, the only exception being that game against the Jets in Vegas. And I think you make a good point. You know, when you look at the Vegas Golden Knights, by the way, Maxim Zhukov is the next goalie up. Maxim Zhukov was drafted by the Vegas Golden Knights in the fourth round of the draft. Maxim Zhukov is currently playing for the Green Bay Gamblers of the United States Hockey League. Wow. So if anything does happen to Max Lagacy or Dylan Ferguson, by the way, they do expect either Marc-Andre Fleury or Oscar Dansk to be back in the lineup within the next, I guess, week, we're hearing. Marc-Andre Fleury has a concussion, so it's possible that Oscar Dansk comes back into the lineup. But Maxim Zhukov is the next goalie in this never-ending goalie carousel that the Vegas Golden Knights seem to have. So hopefully it doesn't get to Maxim Zhukov. I just like saying that name.
Yeah.
Maxim Zhukov.
Maxim Zhukov. It's kind of fun to say. No, I mean, I think you're right, Ezzie. And it's funny, George McPhee was a little derided for the amount of goalies and defensemen he was taking. And perhaps he knew something, because look what happens with, you know, with goalies in the NHL this early on in this season for him. Now, to me, the curious part and the unfortunate part, what we'll never know, because, of course, it's speculation, but it really is too bad that just before they went on this road trip, they didn't have kind of that healthy contingent of goaltenders to kind of go out, see what they were able to do on this six-gamer, which is a big East Coast road trip, and see if they could make hay with kind of their full team, including, obviously, their goalie. So, you know, they're making do. They're trying to, you know, keep the dam from breaking, but it seems like it's a little too much for this young goaltending contingent.
Dave, let's head to break, because I don't know how many times I can say Maxim Zhukov.
Went a lot this segment.
When we return, Dave Jamieson of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 Edmonton is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day version of the show. We're live on TSN 1290. Little Nirvana bringing us out of the break. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Dave Jamieson of TSN 1260 in Edmonton, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Good to chat with you guys, especially after a win. It's a nice change.
You know, Dave, you mentioned the win last night. By the way, earlier in the show I said that the Oilers won 5-2, so obviously I missed the last two goals. The Oilers, in fact, defeated the New Jersey Devils at home 6-3 last night. Taylor Hall's returned to the city of Edmonton. And a couple of segments ago, Dave, we were talking about Taylor Hall for Adam Larson, the big trade that happened about a year and a half ago. Now that it's been about a year and a half, how would you assess that trade? Has it still worked out the way the teams thought it was going to work out?
Well, if you were to ask the New Jersey Devils, they would say, yeah, they're thrilled with what they got in Taylor Hall, and they should be. I mean, we saw it last night here. He drives the play for his team. He's, I had the Matt Laughlin on the show yesterday, the play-by-play voice of the New Jersey Devils, and it's Taylor Hall's team. And I think the Devils, when they set out to acquire him, that's the kind of guy they wanted, and that's the kind of guy they're getting this year. You know, to assess the Larson deal, I mean, you need to go back. The Oilers finished the year last season with 103 points, and they got into the second round of the playoffs. Now, Adam Larson didn't take them there on his own, but he was part of a, you know, a revitalized Edmonton Oilers team. Yes, that's led by Connor McDavid. We get all of that. But at some point, the Oilers defense needed to be changed. And I don't know if you're ever going to be able to assess this trade with any sort of detachment, because people were so emotionally invested in Taylor Hall, good and bad. And when it went down, they said, that's all we got is a big, tough, largely stay-at-home defenseman who's not particularly offensively blessed, but is going to give you, you know, heavy minutes and a heavy kind of game. And so, you know, look, I'm from Vancouver. People still get upset about the Cam Neely trade. You know, so I don't know if it's ever going to be the kind of deal where Oilers fans, unless they win a Stanley Cup with Adam Larson in the lineup, that they're ever going to feel entirely comfortable with. The Oilers could use Taylor Hall right about now, that's for sure.
You know, Dave, the Oilers are 3-6-1 in their last 10 games, but as we talked about, stopped the red-hot Devils team last night. Do you think the Oilers have started to turn things around offensively last night or now?
Last night, and I'm cautious because it's last night, and the Detroit Red Wings are coming in here on Sunday, and, you know, you would think that this should be a two-pointer for Edmonton, but you know, I'm a big believer, and I think a lot of people largely are, is I want to see sustained offense. A one-off against a New Jersey team that was undefeated until last night on the road is a great performance. You know, they got the benefit, I'll never say lucky, they got the benefit of a long-distance, you know, shot that Corey Schneider should have got last night and probably would 99% of the time make that save. After the Devils pulled even to tie it, you know, the Oilers went up again on that goal that is a bad goal. And so, listen, they built off that. It was a terrific, terrifically entertaining hockey game last night. I mean, if you have an idea in your head of what an Oilers team can be or should be, last night you saw a lot of it. Very fast on the transition. You know, stuff was working where, you know, as prior to last night, not much has worked this year.
Dave Jamieson of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 Edmonton joins us live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Follow Dave at Jamieson, at Jamieson 1260, I should say. Dave, you know, a Connor McDavid question is coming eventually from us, and, you know, when you look at Connor McDavid, you look at that top line, Leon Draisaitl has been good since he returned from his injury. Is it really coming down to the secondary scoring and the Oilers needing more from guys like Ryan Strome and Milan Lucic?
Oh, without question. The bottom six as a group, just lumping the bottom six on the Oilers forward line, has come under increased scrutiny and or criticism by fans, media, and they should be, because, you know, as great as the stars are, or star and Draisaitl on this team are, it's got to be way more democratic than it has been in terms of scoring. And Milan Lucic has largely not been terribly effective, and the goalie scored last night, went in off his leg. But that's, you know, there's not a lot pretty about Milan Lucic's game, and that's not a criticism. He's going to score and or contribute doing, things that aren't very subtle, and he's got to do more of that. Ryan Strome has been trending better, but not producing points, and, the Oilers didn't make many moves in the offseason, but the big one they did was Jordan Eberle out, Ryan Strome in. So, as much as fans here didn't like what Jordan Eberle didn't do in the playoffs, which was score, he did have a consistent track record of putting up points. He left you wanting more, but at the same time, he could be counted on to, give you 50 to 60, let's say, on any given year. So, that move is less about hockey and more about a salary dump. So Ryan Strome came in with, I think some level of expectations from fans and has largely been, a non-factor. Now, hopefully last night, he can build off that and you can start to see a little more of his real game starting to emerge. But, again, to come back to your original question is, yes, more from everybody else.
Dave, I think it took Ryan Nugent-Hopkins till late in December to get 6 goals. He already has 6 goals in 12 games this season. What do you think has been the difference in his game so far?
I can't speak with absolute certainty, but there is great urgency to his game because there needed to be. And Peter Chiarelli said prior to the season, he was very forthcoming in saying, hey, this is a season where Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has to deliver and must deliver. And, he has the, he was drafted as one thing coming out of Red Deer. And I think there was an expectation that because of where he went in the draft, that comes built in with a certain level of offensive expectation. Now, he is still a creative player offensively. He's very good down low. He's an excellent passer. I think he's got terrific vision and he's an excellent skater, deceptively so. But he's morphing into a more defensive forward, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but the thing that's happened here with, the first core of players, Hall, Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, is they were overpaid at the time. And so now the lens that we look at these guys through, or did in the case of Hall and Eberle, are no longer here, but with Nugent Hopkins is the Oilers are paying you $6 million. With that comes an expectation that you'll not just be good, on defensive zone faceoffs and responsible checking, up and down the ice, is you've got to score. And so, I think he's showing a willingness to push the play and to take shots that maybe he would have looked off last year and look for someone else.
We're joined by Dave Jamieson of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 Edmonton on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Dave, getting back to some of those younger players on the Edmonton Oilers, and I'm sure that on your show in Edmonton, you've talked a lot about this guy, and that's Kyler Yamamoto. He didn't play, I don't believe, last night against the New Jersey Devils. He's played 8 games, so his entry-level deal is going to kick in soon. Is there any chance that Yamamoto goes back to Spokane, or is he up in Edmonton to stay?
No, I think there's a very good chance. But here's the thing, it's funny that we fixate the media on the nine game. And, finally somebody asked Peter Chiarelli and asked other GMs. I think general managers and probably the coaches are less fixated on the 9 game. They sort of look at 40. I know that there's the downside of burning up that entry year, but is that, 9 games gives you a decent taste of what this player can do, and Yamamoto hasn't played every single game, obviously. He's had a chunk of games, and then he sat one back in, so on and so forth. Here's the thing that complicates it. In the absence of someone else who's better than him, nobody has really emerged to show that they can produce more than what Yamamoto has. And Yamamoto has not scored. I mean, he has been in the play. He's been engaged, and he's been creative and has done some stuff that leads you to believe this guy's going to be an Oiler sooner than later. But Jesse Puljujärvi has not done anything. In Bakersfield, he has not, seized an opportunity to come to make the Oilers say, look, we got to have you up, and Yamamoto, you can go back to Spokane and do great things and take away all the lessons you've learned here. So the Oilers are in a position, I think, right now is
show us somebody better. Have someone internally, or, you know, if a deal needed to be consummated, and those aren't easy, he's likely the best they've got.
Now, Dave, you touched on Jesse Puljujarvi, and I was going to ask you about him because the Manitoba Moose, the Jets farm team, are playing in Bakersfield tonight against those Condors. What have you heard about his game so far? I think he has one goal and four assists in the nine games for Bakersfield. So have you heard anything about his game, that, you know, how he's done, how he's developing?
Well, I hate to get caught up in numbers, but one goal and four assists in nine games for a guy with, you know, who ostensibly is, you know, first-round talent, to be in the NHL tells you part of the story, but we've heard very little. And so that, too, might give you an indication. If they're not talking about you in the minors, in a good, bad, or, you know, otherwise way, you're not having much of an impact. And I think that's got to be very concerning. He's got the physical attributes. He can skate at the NHL level. He's kind of a non-starter in the sense of there isn't a buzz to say, you know, get him up here because he's clearly dominating at that level. And that's what you want. I mean, you're going down there playing against other, you know, highly thought of, you know, rookies or close to being rookies, and you're playing against AHL veterans. And so if he were that good, he'd be there or be here in Edmonton, and he clearly isn't. I'm not sure how soon they want to or need to get him up here.
Dave, we've got one final question for you here, and it's not a hockey question. It's a CFL question. You, of course, worked for the Edmonton Eskimos Football Club for many years. What were your thoughts on that game in Calgary last night? The Bombers win 23-5. They're going to host a home playoff game for the first time since 2011.
Well, let me put aside the, you know, my allegiance or my past to the Edmonton Eskimo Football Club. I'm thrilled for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, just on a personal level. Matt Nichols is a guy I worked with and know very well, and I know he wasn't playing last night, but the Bomber organization, you know, when I was out there many, many years, I had friends with that team, and the late Jerry Maslowski was a close friend of mine. So, you know, the Bombers have always been a team that I've felt very strongly about, and the fan base. The fans there, I know Saskatchewan gets a lot of applause, and they should, for the kind of fans that they have there. But I really think Winnipeg is a fantastic CFL city. They love the Bombers, and the Bombers haven't always loved them back with good teams. This is a really good team. You know, I really want the Bombers to, you know, to take this as far as they can go. The Matt Nichols story, I know you guys know it well, and Andrew Harris has been really tremendous. They've got a bunch of good coaches there. I think Mike O'Shea has really emerged into one of the, you know, top CFL coaches. So, you know, I think watching them do what they did last night was terrific. And I know Calgary didn't have Levi Mitchell, and they went with Andrew Buckley. And all that said, I'm not sure I'd want to meet the Bombers right now. You know, if they've got Nichols there back and healthy and ready to go, I think that that team is, you know, it's the CFL, so I never want to say they're a lock to do anything, but I'm not sure I want to play that Bomber team. They're very impressive, have been all year.
Well, Dave, this year there's going to be a second Banjo Bowl because the Bombers will host the Saskatchewan Rough Riders next weekend, and it's great to have playoff football back in Winnipeg. Dave, we always appreciate you coming on. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch up with you really soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, we're going to recap this week for the Manitoba Moose. They picked up a big win last night over the Stockton Heat. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Final segment here on Saturday morning. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk, Drew Mandel off this week, but he will be back on Wednesday's NHL This Week. He will be back on next Saturday's show. A reminder that the afternoon drive is coming up at 3 o'clock live from Boston Pizza City Place, and then at 5 o'clock, Kevin O and JP Vigier will be along for the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show. This final segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Legal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight, Dave, is the last night for Jamie Kennedy. He's been in town for the last three nights. There's a 7:30 show and a 10 o'clock show, and I believe there are a few tickets left for those last two shows for Jamie Kennedy. So go to rumorscomedyclub.com and buy your tickets for Jamie Kennedy. Dave, one final segment here, and I want to talk about the Manitoba Moose, because the Manitoba Moose lost their last game to the Bakersfield Condors. But they won last night against the Stockton Heat. They lost 5-2 to Bakersfield on Wednesday. They won 4-1 last night against Stockton. They play Bakersfield again tonight, which is a quick little drive there.
Three and a half hours, yeah.
In California. But I wanted to get your take on this week for the Moose. They picked up two wins, I believe, out of the three games. Or two wins out of their last four games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to get your take on Tucker Poolman's debut, the play of Eric Comrie, and just how this Moose team is going here through the first 11 games of the season.
You know what? It's interesting. Their numbers aren't that different in terms of this the points they've put as a collective team group on the board after the start of the season when you compare this start to last year. But collectively as a group, when you're watching this Moose team compared to what we saw last year, it's a way different group. And speaking to just last night's game, I mean, Eric Comrie, I mean, Mitch Peacock had the call on the broadcast on Moose Hockey, but it sounded like he was absolutely sensational. And he made some spectacular saves, 40 in total, of 41 shots that he faced from Stockton. And really what the key for the game and the key for the Moose and, you know, for the Jets moving forward is the development of these young prospects. And, you know, Nick Batan got assigned and, you know, probably wasn't the happiest. That was his fourth game now, having been since he was assigned by the Jets to the Moose, and you know, he picked up two assists in the win. Jack Roslovic had a nice 2-on-1 goal to extend the lead. It was 2-1 at that point with Patan, and he went on the 2-on-1 with Patan and gave them the 3-1 lead. And again, you've got a guy like Mason Appleton. He picked up an empty net goal, not the same of course, but picked up another assist as well. So he's continuing to round out his game. And then again, you're getting contributions from guys like Mike Scarbosa and Buddy Robinson. So a collective team effort, and of course I can't not mention Sammy Niku, another prospect that everybody's got their eye on because he had his first goal in the AHL, so that was a big moment for him. Came, I believe, on the power play, a big shot from the point. So you're getting contributions from your young players, and as you know, we looked at this a while ago. I mean, you've got your pretty much your entire 2015 draft class playing for the Manitoba Moose right now, which as an organization is something you want because you really want these young players to get that opportunity. And a guy like Jansen Harkins, who, you know, we seem to kind of forget about, you know, he's an important piece who's going to get some time to develop. He's not going to be rushed into the NHL by any stretch of the imagination, but he'll get that chance. He and Chase DeLeo were playing together. There's a bit of a mix-up with the lines, you know, with Lemieux and Connor up with the Jets. Then they had Patrice Cormier playing with, giving a little sandpaper to the line of Jack Roslovic and Nick Batan. And then you had J.C. Lepon with Harkins and Harkins and DeLeo. So that was good. And then your second line remained the same in Robinson and Scarbosa and Appleton, which has been a very good line for the Moose. Big win. And really, just again, it shows that this team is playing a really solid game, and they're playing a good collective team game. They seem to have bought into what Coach Vincent is teaching them.
And Dave, you mentioned a lot of players there. And, you know, Jack Roslovic, as you mentioned, had 2 points last night. He's got 10 points in 11 games, really picking up from where he played last year, being a top player for the Moose. And you talked about Nick Batan picked up a couple of assists yesterday, Mason Appleton. When you consider that your top two lines right now are Batan, Cormier, and Roslovic, and then your second line is Michael Scarbosa between Mason Appleton and Robinson, and then you've got a player like Chase DeLeo on that third line with Jansen Harkins. In the 3 years since the Moose have been in Winnipeg for the second time, mm-hmm. Is this by far the best forward depth that you've seen this team have?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you had Kyle Connor, not that long ago, you had Kyle Connor and Brendan Lemieux on this team. So, I mean, just that just further adds to the depth. And again, you always question how guys are going to mesh, and it really seems like you're getting a good mix of veteran AHL guys mixed in with these young guys, and that's what they need. They need a little bit of, you know, veteran experience to see what they're doing, you know, keep their shift short, play the right way, mixed in with the guys being allowed to flourish with talent. You know, Patrice Cormier isn't going to be going on those two-on-ones specifically, although they did have a breakaway goal this season. But for the most part, you're getting those guys who aren't necessarily going to be the hands guys, putting all your talent, loading it all up, because they did have Chase DeLeo up on that top line. And I really think for their benefit, it's going to be good long-term to have guys like DeLeo and Harkins playing together, seeing maybe a little bit of a less difficult pairing in the, probably the third pairing for the opposing team.
And Dave, we should mention that the Moose have four more games coming up on this road trip, including tonight. And then next Wednesday, they're going to be at Stockton again. And then next weekend, on Saturday and Sunday, they're in San Jose to play the Barracudas, the farm team of the San Jose Sharks. So it's actually going to be a week and a half before Moose fans are going to get to see their team. It's Wednesday, November 15th against Chicago. They've got a back-to-back set, not on back-to-back days, but Wednesday, November 15th, and then Friday, November 17th, the Manitoba Moose are going to play the Chicago Wolves. So it's going to be quite a bit of time that the Jets are going to be spending on the road in California. But as you mentioned, you beat a Stockton Heat team. That's a pretty darn good team. Bakersfield, obviously, is the Edmonton Oilers affiliate. Stockton Heat are the Calgary Flames affiliate. So I agree with you. When you consider Jack Roslovic, it's just a matter of time before he's in the NHL. We know that, but he's developing really nicely. Nick Batan is doing what we thought he would do on the Moose, playing on the top line. Michael Scarbosa and Buddy Robinson, as you mentioned, have complemented these young players like Batan and Jansen Harkins and Jack Roslovic, and really changed the dynamic and outlook of this team. And this is a team that's looking to get back into the playoffs for the first time since they came over from St. John's.
And one player we haven't even mentioned yet, we talked about him earlier in the show, is Tucker Pullman. And Tucker Pullman, again, from listening to the broadcast, was everywhere last night, and he played in all situations, and it's exactly what you want to do with a prospect. So I think from that perspective, the Moose are doing what you want them to do as an AHL farm team, is develop these young prospects, give them that opportunity to flourish and grow, and then move them to the big club.
It's great to see, because we know how important it is to have a feeder system from the American Hockey League to the NHL. That's going to do it for us this week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It was a great show today. I want to thank all of our guests. In the first hour, we had Nick Boynton. Mark Dumont of the Athletic Montreal joined us. In the second hour, Michael Trakos of Post Media joined us. Greg Krupa of the Detroit News joined us at 11 o'clock. And then we recently had Dave Jamieson of TSN 1260 Edmonton on the show. I want to thank all of our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Keener Jerseys, and the Linden Market Dental Center. Puck drop is 6 o'clock tonight, live from Bell MTS Place. Afternoon Ride is going to kick it off at 3. Thanks for listening. Have a good Saturday.
Find yourself the other